to The Divine Breadcrumb with your hosts, Carol Campos and Deb Sorensen. Carol and Deb have always believed the universe helps people on their path by sending signs, clues, or what they call divine breadcrumbs. A divine breadcrumb can create both small and massive shifts in a person's life. On this podcast, Carol and Deb will speak with authors, healers, entrepreneurs, and other amazing people across the globe to discuss these pivotal moments. So get ready to learn, to love, and to laugh. And remember, the universe always provides if you allow it to. Enjoy the show.
Hi, this is Carol, co-host of The Divine Breadcrumb. I am so excited to talk to you about my new 10-week one-on-one coaching program, Energy, Esteem, and Empowerment. I designed this program for people who feel powerless, who feel like their self-worth has been damaged and continually attract toxic situations and people into their lives, but can't figure out why. And worse, they feel like they can't be who they really are. This is something I've been called to do for a long time based on my own experiences with trauma and abuse and my long journey to heal. In this program, we'll be focusing on uncovering your personal power, cultivating self-esteem and self-love, and doing deep energy work. It's time to remove the mask and let your true voice be heard. To learn more, go to carollcampos.com, click on the services tab, and then private coaching. Again, that's carollcampos.com, click on the services tab, and then private coaching. You can do this, and I'll be right there with you. Hi, everyone. This is Carol.
Hi, everybody. This is Deb. Welcome back to the Divine Breadcrumb.
Yes, welcome back. So have you ever gone to reach for your keys and they're not where you left them and you look all over the house and then you go back to the usual spot and there they are? Or maybe you're driving down the road and you notice a car in your rearview mirror and then suddenly you look and the car has vanished, even though there were no roads to turn off. Or my favorite, pennies show up on the floor or on tables, seemingly out of nowhere. What's happening? Are we simply forgetful or unaware? Or is there a more interesting possibility unfolding? Today we are joined by Cynthia Sue Larson. Cynthia has a degree in physics from UC Berkeley, an MBA degree, a doctor of divinity, is the founder of Reality Shifters, and is president of the International Mandela Effect Conference. And since 1999, Cynthia has shared findings from scientific research in the fields of quantum physics, quantum biology, the placebo effect, positive psychology, sociology, and alternative medicine. And we became aware of Cynthia's work through Gaia TV. She was a guest on Regina Meredith's show, Open Minds, and we were fascinated and immediately started reading her books. And three of our favorites are High Energy Money, Reality Shifts, and Quantum Jumps. And today we're going to talk about what reality shifts are and can we work with them to make instantaneous changes in our life? And what if we could jump between realities? We'll also talk about quantum jumps and one of our favorite topics, the Mandela Effect. One of the things that we love about Cynthia is that she takes subjects that may sound like science fiction, but then backs them up with scientific principles. We've never had a show like this, and we are beyond excited to dive in. Cynthia, welcome to the show. We're thrilled to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be with you, ladies. It's a great subject, of course. I'm fascinated by it and dedicating my career to it. So you know, I love it.
Yes, it is fascinating. And even when I was reading your book, which you do a very good job of explaining physics to lay people, but even still, like, your mind kind of goes and then all of a sudden, like, I hit this wall and it's like my head blows up. Right. Like, I just can't wrap my head around it. Because there's so many moving pieces. But we're going to get into all of that. So let's go ahead and get started.
Yeah. So why don't we start with your work, Reality Shifts? Well, your work about reality shifts, I should say. What are they and how do they happen? And maybe if you could give some examples.
Right. Well, I think of reality shifts as, I've just recently learned, Mary Rose Barrington of the Society of Psychical Research, she called it just one of those things. And similar to the work that she's done, I've been tracking for more than 20 years as firsthand reports of things that appear, disappear, transform, and transport, and changes in the way we experience time. And that's what that's been my working definition of reality shifts. The first other person that I've seen use that exact term is the author PMH Atwater in her book, Future Memory. So there are other researchers in this field, but I don't think anybody's delved into it as much as I have.
It is an odd thing, and it's happened probably all my life, but it is one of those things where when it happens, you think that you are just forgetful or unaware or something. Like recently, and I told this to Carol last week, I was getting ready to go out, and we have two bathrooms in the house, and typically my routine is in the bedroom floor bathroom, but I was in a hurry. I was rushing out, so I was going to brush my teeth downstairs. And so I grabbed my toothbrush, which is in a holder on the counter, and I went into the drawer where we keep the toothpaste, and it wasn't there. And that's where the toothpaste always is in that drawer. So I put my toothbrush down on the counter, and I'm looking through the drawer for the toothpaste, and it's not there. So then I move over to the other drawer, and it's not there. And I thought, oh, well, maybe my wife finished it, and I'll go into the closet and get another tube of toothpaste. And so I go in to look, and I can't find another tube in the toothpaste, and I turn back, and there's the toothpaste on the counter next to my toothbrush.
Wow. Yeah, that's a classic example of things that disappear and reappear.
Right. And of course, my immediate thought was, I must have taken it out and put it there. But I know the order of when I put the toothbrush down on the counter, and it was not there when I did that. So it's one of those things that you sort of second guess yourself about. But if you stop and think about it, you know that you don't really have a way to explain it.
Right. And then I find that once we begin opening our mind to the possibility that this could be occurring, these reality shifts are quite real. It's not just forgetfulness. That's when things can really take off. That's when we're capable of experiencing really kind of miraculous things, like things appearing when you need them, even when there's no reason to expect it. We tend to expect these sorts of things with synchronicity when events coincide. But it kind of blows our mind when the physical object appears, because for some reason, we think that that's different. We think that seeing an object that appears, disappears, transforms, or transports is like mind-blowing, because we're so focused on the reality of these objects. And what we're finding with quantum physics is when you conceptualize the world a little bit more according to quantum physics, then you can start expecting, of course, you can see things appear, disappear, transform, transport, and changes in the way we experience time.
Do you have a favorite example from either your own life or from the book?
I love money examples because I think, especially right now, people panic, and you don't need to panic, obviously.
Yeah.
So much better to be in a relaxed, energized state of mind, hopefully with some humor and joy. Because when we do that, one of my favorite examples was needing to tip a waitress at a restaurant back when my daughters were quite young, and we were at a Mexican restaurant, and I was explaining that the waitress works on mostly tips. There's some salary. I was explaining it to my young daughters about how that works, and there were no $1 bills. And I thought, well, that would have been perfect if there were. So I closed the wallet, and I'm talking to my daughters about how sometimes things just appear when you need them. They know that. They were young, and kids are open to this. Yeah. They'd seen so many examples at home. So I just said, maybe I should look again. All I need is to find some $1 bills. Should I look again? And my daughters were all for it. They're like 7 and 9 years old. And one of them was really into it. Like, yes, look again. So I opened my wallet, and there was a $1 bill. So I pulled it out. It's like I'm doing a magic trick at Las Vegas. And then I shut the wallet again, and I look at them conspiratorially, like, well, that's a good start, but I think we need another one. And they just kept saying, yeah. And there was more and more joy and excitement. And it's that beginner's mind that's so open to things. When you can come from pure heart, beginner's mind, and a knowingness that these things do happen. Long story short, I just pulled out as many dollar bills as I needed for that tip. I just kept pulling out dollar bill after dollar bill. And they weren't in there.
I love that. It's so exciting and it never gets old. Every time something like, I mean, that's a big extreme example and how fun, but even the littler examples, you know, that might be a little more subtle. It's still fun when it happens.
The little ones are amazing. During this pandemic, I needed to service my computer, but I didn't want to deal with the whole falderall of taking it in somewhere. So I thought, no problem. I'll just check YouTube, get the service manual, and learn how to do this myself. So anyway, it all went pretty well. But then when I put it all back together, anybody who's done this sort of thing is familiar with this concept that there, it all goes back, except you can't find one tiny little spring that goes on a tiny miniature screw.
Yes.
But the thing that's so funny is I had it in its own little Ziploc bag because I'd compartmentalized the whole project, very methodical. And I just a second earlier seen the two tiny springs, the two tiny screws, and then a regular tiny screw, not the miniature. There was nowhere it could have gone. It just was in my hand 1 minute, gone the next. And I thought, well, it's just a spring. It's okay. And then I found out I had not connected a ribbon connector, so I had to take everything apart. When I did that, that's when the magic happened because something impossible occurred, and I found that tiny spring wrapped around the large screw. And there's no way, there were several problems with that. I had inspected that large screw many times.
Yeah.
That spring was not there. So, but I don't mind that it's kind of like no questions asked. It's like, okay, we're all good here. Yeah, thank you. I'll put this where it belongs. Okay, cool. So that was just recent. That was just like last week.
Oh, I love it.
It's just fun when these things happen.
It is a lot of fun, and it's kind of like playing a game. And as long as you maintain that sense of fun about it and don't get all freaked out or, oh my God, it's missing, where did it go, and crazy.
Yeah, that's the key. It's really the key is your emotional state. And people in our Western culture, we tend to dissociate our emotional state of being from what we consider the hard, fast physical world. And there's actually such a strong connection. I'm sure you share that, I'm sure, with your breadcrumbs.
Yeah. Yeah, if we can get back to a way of cultivating that childlike wonder, or getting, you know, connect to that again, this would be so much easier and we could experience this a lot more often.
Right. And that's the key, is just being in full alignment with all parts of ourself, from your head down to your toes. And we think with our gut, we think with our heart. So it's not just our brain doing the thinking. And that's, I think, the key to the whole thing, is just lining ourselves up, getting in. And then, you know, that state of flow that you know all about, but it's the key. So if everybody's been listening to you talking about this, and you lived this example clearly, so that's the key.
Yeah,
absolutely. So let's move on to your book, Quantum Jumps. I just finished reading this, and this involves the concept of parallel timelines, which I find this subject fascinating. The first time that I was exposed to this concept was in Richard Bach's book, The Bridge Across Forever, which is more of an allegory as opposed to, you know, a scientific or book about this subject per se. So it makes it very magical and creates a lot of curiosity around it. And I've been fascinated with the idea ever since. So you explain that a quantum jump is made through a kind of a handshake through time and space. I can see that picture and I just love that visual. This connection forms a bridge that then allows the person to experience another reality. Can you talk a little bit more about that and share some examples?
Yes, this is an idea of, it's very much like the reality shifting, but now we're bringing it into conscious intent and recognizing that something that you imagine, you can basically act as if you're there and succeed at it. Most people know the example of waking up a little too early, but you need to be ready to go. So if anybody is listening and they've done this, then you know it works. You just tell yourself, I got enough sleep. I did. Never mind what the facts say. I'm going to tell myself I got enough sleep. And this has been actually proven to be true when scientists such as psychologists do cognitive tests on people to find out how well are they functioning at paying attention and doing cognitive tasks. Especially, they've done it exactly with this example of not getting enough sleep. And so when people tell themselves, I did get enough sleep, they do just as well as if they did actually get what their ideal amount of sleep would be. And then the control group don't have any such reassurance and they don't tend to do as well. But my book Quantum Jumps is cool because it includes some real laboratory tested examples of things that you can do. Like, for example, if you want to understand that quantum physics and not have your brain go, what happened? You can just point your fingers at your head. And even if you don't know what that's doing, and on some subconscious level, this is having a very powerful effect of bringing energy and attention to your mind. So there will be increased clarity. The same thing works when you put your hands over your heart, if you need to connect to maybe a loved one, a family member, someone that you're having some emotional issues with, and you just know, I need to get back to my heart center. You can actually point at your heart or put your hands over your heart and instantly feel a much stronger sense of connection. So these are examples from the field of embodied cognition, and it's a real science now of just looking at how you can do physical things to, like, if you want to cheer up, put a clean pen or pencil in your mouth and curl corners of your mouth upwards. And what you're actually doing is you're doing that quantum jump, which is basically doing something that helps you act as if, and then it helps to also bring a little energy to it. I'm starting with these kind of, these may seem like slightly retarded examples, like this can't be all there is. No, this is a starting point. Because most people don't feel like they're just ready to go to, okay, now you're going to look at your, like our family dog had cataracts forming in his eyes. I saw one day when I went out to check on him. But I know, I know that you can actually visualize multiple realities. I do it all the time. So I was able to also, think to myself, no, and feel it with the fullness of my heart, my gut, everything. No, our dog's not getting cataracts. I'd like him to be able to go into old age and see. So that worked. But I had other family members involved. So my daughter came to me like, Mom, bad news about the dog. His eyes look clouded over? Yes. Okay, no problem. Here's what we're going to do. And so I explained it to my daughter. No problem. It worked. And then my husband, same thing, you know, bad news about the dog. So I literally went through this like three times. First me, then my daughter, then my husband. And then when we're all on the same page, no problem.
No problems.
And that dog never had cataracts, even though we'd all seen it like a little flash of reality.
I was just going to ask, I've had this conversation with other people in my life, Carol and others. I have struggled with weight my whole life, and I have lost lots of weight and gained it back and then lost lots of weight. And the periods of time where I am successful in losing weight, it is almost effortless. It's not even really a decision per se. I just do it, whatever it is, whatever the actions are that make that happen. And it's not even something that I struggle with. It's just completely effortless. Whereas other times in my life when I try, it is the hardest thing ever. Like I can't stay on a plan. I can't commit. I can't get it done. The times that I've been successful, is that another timeline? Is that another reality?
I would say it sounds like it to me, based on what you're describing, that it's that effortless feeling that you just, probably because you've got energy in your life at that time, mm-hmm. or you're probably all enthused about something, and that's great, because that energy, you may wonder, what does it take to make a quantum jump? How come they don't happen? Well, they don't happen, I mentioned one thing, it just being out of alignment, head, heart, and gut. Mm-hmm. When you're all lined up and you're just so focused on something that energizes you and you're feeling joyful and relaxed in general, and just you're in that groove, you're in that flow, then you are literally in a reality where it's not any effort at all to be in that way.
That's fascinating, because we've several conversations about why is that and how can I make that happen. Mm-hmm. And it was so much easier then, and I just want to be there now. So that's great to have sort of a not only an explanation, but now sort of a path to get there, to get back there again.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. And yes, we've had that conversation many times.
Especially now, right? Because
people gosh. Yes. I'm telling you, people joke about, you know, we used to, in college, it was the freshman 15. It's the COVID-19. That's a thing. It's a thing, people.
But we can just say cancel on that. Like, okay.
Yes.
Let's go to this other reality that we're also talking about.
Yeah.
Where it's just effortless. And
effortless and simple.
Yeah. That's our next meeting, Deb. And our next
one-on-one.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. And Cynthia, there's another, I mean, slightly different subject, but along the same vein. You told, it was a story, it might've been in Reality Shifts, about your neighbor's cat. And how the cat had passed, but then something really interesting happened. So I was wondering if you could share that.
Yes. This is very interesting indeed. The cat was named Ashes, and my roommate, Catherine, she brought Ashes up to Berkeley, where we were living together and studying at UC Berkeley. She lived with her, she had previously lived in San Diego. So when she was visiting her family, she somehow, I don't know how she got the cat, but she came back with a kitten in the car. And so for many years, that was our household cat and very special and meaningful to me. At some point, I moved out because I was getting married soon. So I moved across the street. I don't know how often that ever happens, but it was kind of amazing at the time. Like, wow, I found a good deal on an apartment across the street. But I loved it because then I think of it as our cat, her cat, Catherine's cat, Ashes, would come and visit in the garden. So he would frequently just be in the yard sunning himself. And just, it was so wonderful. Like, oh, we know each other. And, you know, because he'd grown up with me and I knew him. And he was thrilled that someone that he knew now lived across the street. So it's kind of like his yard. Anyway, yeah, it was great. And then one day I heard terrible news from Catherine. She said, oh, I've got some bad news for you. You may have noticed you haven't seen Ashes lately. I said, right? Is he okay? And she said, no, he got hit by a car. He died. And I was devastated. And then she didn't want to talk about it because she was tearing up. I was tearing up. Like, okay. And so she went back to her side of the street. We lived on Cedar Street, a pretty busy street. So there's always traffic. So we talked for a little bit. Then we're both crying. So I go back to my apartment. I can't believe it. It's like, it kind of hit me like that can't be true. And so I told my husband that Ashes died, and he knew Ashes too. But then here's where it gets interesting. Remember I had that feeling like this can't be true. And remember, I'm living across the street. I didn't know what had happened. It was the weirdest thing, but the most wonderful thing. One day, there was Ashes in the garden looking like he hadn't been washing properly for like a week or two. And also a little arthritic or something, kind of stiff. So, you know, how cats bathe themselves, but he wasn't quite doing as well at that. But I didn't care. I just thought, oh my gosh, Ashes. Oh, you're here. And I hugged him, and I felt, I didn't waste any more time with him the way we get so busy, and sometimes we don't realize these moments are precious.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
With our neighbors, our loved ones, our roommate's cat. So I really savored every moment with that cat. But then I brought it up to my husband. I said, do you remember that Ashes died? And this is one of those times where there was just that real confusion on my husband's face. Like, I thought, yeah. And then he just had that look of what? Which we see it a lot nowadays with this Mandela effect, but back then, remember this, I didn't tell you when it happened. This was the 1980s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was, it just kind of blew my mind. I didn't have anywhere to put this experience. It was it's like a Twilight Zone, put it in the X-Files.
Yeah. Both Deb and I have cats, so that one really stood out to me. But this leads into my next question about the Mandela effect. You know, it's fascinating to us. And it has to do with people remembering alternate histories. And we can get into two of my favorite examples from Snow White and Field of Dreams. But before we do that, would you share with our listeners how the term Mandela effect originated?
Yes, it was popularized around 2010 by a blogger named Fiona Broom, where she was at a conference, the Dragon Con, I think, and she talked with a bunch of people, and they were all discussing how, wow, don't you all remember that Nelson Mandela died while he was still in prison? I'm like, yeah, I remember that. But look at this, he's alive. And so in honesty, I've been talking with this about the radio, the famous personality Art Bell on his show, Midnight in the Desert, back in 2001. And he, at that point, had he actually used the term Mandela effect. Somehow it didn't quite catch on, even though he said it, even though hundreds of people were writing to him, remembering Nelson Mandela died. Even back in the 80s and 90s, they were telling him this. And so it's recorded where Art Bell is using the term Mandela effect to me in April 2001. So, but somehow it didn't catch on then. It took another decade, and now it's another decade yet. So there's a tipping point that happens with the population when we all start noticing collectively that history can look quite different. It's like a reality shift, but it's happening on a much larger scale where is it affecting our collective consciousness. So it's group memory where we might collectively remember not just Nelson Mandela, but I also remember Jane Goodall. I remember she was murdered within a month after Dian Fossey was murdered. And that blew my mind. Like, wait a minute. One of them is bad, but two is impossible. That's not okay. We can't have two people, two of the great female researchers, both of them working with primates, be murdered within like a month or two. That's not right. But then I didn't think about it. Then years later, what do you know? Jane Goodall's alive. And that one totally blows my mind.
Oh my gosh. And that one I don't remember. I do remember Larry Hagman thinking he was dead, and then suddenly he's alive.
Yes. Now, that one also goes back to the 80s, the 90s. So like when I wrote my book, Reality Shifts, I included that example along with Ashes, because those are two examples of knowing for sure someone or a cat or a person had died and now they're back. And so this is what the Mandela effect is named after, is Nelson, people remembering Nelson Mandela died, but then he was alive again. Now he's dead again. I used to call this alive again. That's what I call it in my book, Reality Shifts, because that makes sense to me. But this term Mandela effect has stuck, and now it refers not just to the alive again phenomenon, but all aspects of it, where we might notice all kinds of history changing, including geographical changes, human physiology and anatomy changes, changes to movies, you name it. Anything that we can collectively remember is up for grabs and it can change.
Yeah. And so for our listeners, a couple of ones that might resonate with them, you know, a lot of us grew up on the Disney movies and, you know, I watched Snow White a gazillion times. And when my daughter was little, she watched it. And it was always when the witch or her evil stepmother was in her mirror, she'd say, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all. Well, now when you watch it, it's magic mirror. And I knew it was not magic mirror. And most of the people I talked to, and I remember, that might've been in one of the Regina Meredith interviews that I heard you talking about that. And I went and looked, and I was like, I can't believe this. I cannot believe this. There's no way. And same thing with Field of Dreams. It was, if you build it, they will come. And now it's he. Now it's he will come. And that is just mind-boggling to me because I remember, Deb, I know you remember it totally the other way. But yet I've talked to some people say, no, it was always magic mirror. And that's the part that freaks me out the most.
Right. Okay. This brings up some really interesting aspects of this Mandela effect where, because you brought up several points in the background there, because it's a huge concept. And one thing that may not be clear to people listening and hearing it for the first time right now is that when we say it's changed, we mean you can go pull your movie of Snow White off the shelf, whether it's a video or a DVD, whatever, put your own copy of it in that you know for sure it's always been, because I remember that too, mirror, mirror on the wall. And you'll discover it now always apparently has not been that. Your own copy has now always been magic mirror on the wall. That's kind of trippy.
Yes, yes, it's across the board. It's so crazy to me. There was one that Deb and I, we talk about, which it used to be Jiffy peanut butter. Right. And we remember that. And yet, if I talk to my sister, who's only 3 years younger, she says, no, it was always Jiffy. You're probably just thinking because of Skippy. And I'm like, no, I'm not. It was Jiffy.
Jiffy peanut butter.
Right.
I can picture it.
And part of this phenomenon that I want to touch on, there's so many facets to it, is that it is part of the phenomena that not everyone agrees on all of these changes. Because you might think, well, there's one objective reality and we're not in the right earth anymore, but it's not like that. It's very different. It means each and every experiencer might really resonate with some of these, but not others. And they might actually disagree and say, that one's always been the same for me. And that's okay, because in quantum physics, it does allow for that.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. Recently, and I don't know if you've seen it, Cynthia, there was a movie that came out, I think it was called Yesterday, and it was based on this guy who, he had an accident or something happened. Deb, I know you just saw it more recently than me.
I think he slips and hits his head. You know what? I'm not remembering now how he gets hurt.
There was a vehicular accident. He was riding his bicycle.
Yes. Right. And then when he wakes up, he's one of only a handful of people in the world that remembers the Beatles. And it just reminded me of this. And I just thought it was cool that it was in a more recent movie and they're talking about this, because it was just fascinating. And even though it was fiction, it's a lot of, you know, the subject matter we're talking about.
It is. Yeah, the kind of things we tend to see with these Mandela effects, some people say that there are messages in them. So like if you build it, he will come, then it's kind of, it takes on a sort of spiritual feeling. Whereas before, if you build it, they will come, it sounded like, well, build the baseball field
and the baseball team will come.
Yeah, you'll get the team, right. You'll get the players. It made sense that way. Now it's like, he will come. Who is this he?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, just as a nod to how things sort of proliferate through the consciousness of the country anyway, there was an actual category, the Mandela effect, on Jeopardy.
Wow.
About 6 months ago. And when I first saw it as the title of the category, I thought, oh, they must be twisting it and just be a category about Mandela. But it wasn't. It was a category about the Mandela effect. And I was stunned.
That is good news.
Yes. And that in and of itself may be a Mandela effect. It maybe, you know, that may already be gone. I don't know.
That's okay.
Be the only one that remembers it, but I saw it.
Well, one way that we're now starting to play collectively with these reality shifts, it's like reality shifts are happening on the group level. So as social animals that we are, we're capable of basically voting with our hearts, with our guts. Mm. So what do we need? You know, right now we need lots of things. You know, we need life to get back to some semblance of what we recognize as normal. But but we're voting for that. We're doing it all the time. It's part of how we're running. That's like how we interact with nature. We see evidence of it, as I point out in my book, Quantum Jumps, from the quantum biology, that all of nature seems to operate according to these quantum principles. So it's good news.
Mm, absolutely. And that actually kind of leads into my next question. Have these shifts and jumps sort of always happened and always existed, or is this sort of a more recent experience? And is there a lesson, a bigger lesson that we're supposed to be getting from this now that sort of more people are aware of it and having these experiences and talking about them?
Right. My personal take on it, with my background in physics and spirituality and I've also traveled around the world. My parents used to take me to places where they'd never seen white people, and they hadn't, my father wanted to, before the world got McDonaldized, you know, that there's these chains everywhere. He wanted us to see the way people actually live on all the continents and all the small islands in the Pacific. And so with all that strange, bizarre background I have, I would tell you these changes have always been happening. That's the evidence I've seen from all the cultures I've visited. It's kind of like I grew up, like, let's travel the world and see how everybody lives with their indigenous ways of knowing. It's very intrinsic to indigenous ways of knowing. And that's something we've lost sight of with our Western scientific progress and focus on material realism and reductionism. So there's been an overemphasis on that. When you ask about what's going on, my reference would be to the book by physicist Dr. Carl Johan Kalman, The Nine Waves of Creation, because what he's done is he's mapped out when he predicted that we would be going into a phase with a new technology starting end of October 2011, based on just these waves of consciousness that are basically in the background. And this is, you may have heard of the Mayan long count. the Mayan calendar, people remember December 21st, 2012. Mm-hmm. So if you look at that, then you see that the ninth wave, all the waves converged at the end of October 2011. And starting at that point, we were in a period of time where every couple of weeks, we're going through an entire ninth wave function. So it seems like the world goes upside down every 2 weeks. I think most people would agree with that. It's like, yep, it's been crazy. But on the bright side, we're getting used to it. By this point, now we're several years into it. So if you look at this as a wave function of consciousness with a higher vibratory frequency that all of us are feeling, it means that we're manifesting what we think about much more readily. And that includes people that weren't working on meditation. They didn't believe in it, but everybody is starting to see the impact of what you're thinking. It's like as within, so without. So we're collectively constructing reality together. It's a little bit of hiccups and bumps on the road, I think. But the technology that arrived, when he predicted a new technology would arrive, he didn't know what it would be. I believe it's the Mandela effect.
Yeah. Mm. Interesting.
I seriously could talk about the Mandela effect for hours. I think it's so fascinating. Cynthia, you gave us a few tips already, but you know, maybe if you could share with our listeners how they can start experiencing reality shifts in their own lives. And I know you had mentioned, you know, kind of staying in flow and getting back in touch with your joy, speaking from the heart, all of that. But are there anything else?
Yes. Well, most of us are pretty heavily steeped in this Western reductionist materialist way of thinking, where the world is things and even God is a thing. And, you know, we're just looking at this whole world of it instead of recognizing the flow, the verbiness of reality. So to get into that state of mind, listen to a show like yours. People could check out my website, realityshifters.com, where I've published every single monthly issue of my newsletter is there. And what the benefit is, every issue contains firsthand reports of reality shifts. So just read them with an open mind and just sort of, and if you want to do nothing but read those stories, they're actually on the website in their own section. You can just read like 2,000 firsthand reports.
Wow.
I highly recommend them. I've read a bunch.
Yeah. And what starts happening is that little gatekeeper to your rational analytical mind is going to go kaplooey at some point. Like, well, this stuff's happening for all these people. Maybe it could happen for me. And you'll just feel like, okay, yes. Because you want to get to that point where you wear out that part of you that says, no, this is impossible. Only things are real. Only what we measure is real. You want to blow right through that and get back to that beginner's mind that we all start with. We know it's true.
Right. And that's so true, because after I found your work and read your books and read some of the newsletters, that is what happened. I did start noticing. And, you know, and then, of course, my ego would fight with me. Well, you just weren't aware before. You know, that was always there. You know, for example, I've lived in the same place for 17 years. And I was just telling Deb about this the other day. I'm driving down the street, a street I've gone down thousands of times. And I noticed a house I've never noticed. It's right there on the main road. And now there it is. And I just thought, okay, something feels, it's familiar, but a little bit different. And now I really believe that there was some kind of shift. Before I found your work, I would have just thought, all right, I tend to zone out when I drive and I'm just not being aware.
Right. Yeah, this is, my books, Reality Shifts and Quantum Jumps, both include examples of large scale things like buildings and people have written in with reports of houses and horses and entire like sections of streets can be suddenly there that weren't there before or look completely different. And this is happening around the world. I live in Berkeley and sometimes people joke it's Berserkly, kind of like, what is this? The Bermuda Triangle, but it's not specific to this location. It's totally worldwide. And it has been, there's evidence from shamanic traditions that this goes back thousands of years. So it's part of our natural makeup, but we've forgotten about it with that focus on the material realism that like only things are real. And that's not the way quantum physics works. It's not the way nature works. We're actually witnessing just instantaneous evolutionary leaps, and that's the norm. In fact, if you look to see where all the missing links in evolution, there are tons of missing links. And you can even witness real-time evolution in the Petri dish, where an organism can instantly evolve to the right thing so it can digest food it never could digest before. This is the way nature actually does work.
Wow.
Right. Yeah. It's just, again, fascinating. I keep saying fascinating, but I can't think of another word. That's what keeps coming to me. And I wanted to ask you, you know, obviously you have such impressive credentials. And I think that's a great thing to have somebody like you talking about all of this, because it does lend credence to it for people who just think this is way out there. You know, how have you been received in the public and with your peers?
Well, recently, it's been wonderful. We just started this International Mandela Effect Conference. It's a 501c3 nonprofit, and I started it with a number of people that feel like I do about this topic. There's Christopher Anatra, who's known as the quantum businessman. Yeah. He stepped forward and said, you know what, you may have been noticing, we go to the grocery store, it's not just the Jiffy peanut butter that's no longer Jiffy, it's but the Haas avocados, which used to be H-A-A-S, are now Haas. And he works for a company, NECS, that he's the president of that company. So he knows, he's not like some confused person. He's
right.
Actually,
right.
He's got it going on. And he recognized that when people told him, like, we got your software so we can order food for the restaurants in our businesses, because that's what he does. He creates software for food distribution. They were noticing, why are these things changing? Like Stouffer's stovetop stuffing is not there anymore. What's this Kraft stovetop stuffing? You know, what happened to the Jiffy peanut butter? Just all kinds of things. The grocery store is a huge epicenter for Mandela effects.
Oh, interesting. Now I'm going to have to really pay attention. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of us can't even go in a store and just not have mind blown. So it's pretty powerful. So he's part of the International Mandela Effect Conference, big part of it. He's our vice president. And then we've got our master of ceremonies, Jerry Dark Wolf Hicks, who's got a Wednesday program. He's the host of Dark Wolf's Den on the Rippin' Rabbit Common Sense radio station. And then he's very involved in all of this. He's been studying paranormal topics for over 20 years. We also have Shane C. Robinson from the YouTube channel Unbiased and On the Fence. And he brings to us this remarkably calm, grounded, centered, positive outlook with a spiritual angle to it. And then we've also got our Canadian artist, Kimberly Lynn Hansen, who lives a very nonlinear lifestyle. And she talks about that in her talks. So it's getting off of that idea that you have to do things in lockstep fashion, and recognizing instead that we create everything first from the inside.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm being received quite well with that community. We had a conference in Idaho. Yeah, it was, I felt like after more than 20 years of being kind of the lone voice in the wilderness, like, okay, people are showing up. They're recognizing it, this is happening. And not everybody's, there are people, of course, that will panic and start seeing conspiracy theories, but that's never been my framework of viewing this based on my background.
Yeah. And after this last bit, I'm actually for the first time excited to go to the grocery store.
Yeah. We can go together and we'll see what's missing.
Yeah. It can be an adventure.
Yes. It'd be like a little, I don't know, treasure hunt sort of in reverse.
It's
like,
a Mandela.
What's missing? Let's find the things that are missing.
It's going to be your Mandela effect safari.
Yes.
Right. That sounds about right for us, the grocery store.
So what else is coming up for you?
Well, we're starting to put online on the YouTube channel the all of the presentations that just happened. Regina Meredith was our keynote speaker. That one's up, and we'll be putting in order the presentations that took place.
Oh, that's exciting.
That's on. Yeah, so you can either go to imec.world or go directly to the YouTube channel, International Mandela Effect Conference. It's all free. It was a free conference. We were giving away books and money too during the conference. We'll do more of those. We are a nonprofit organization, so we're getting support, and we're planning to do further research as well into this area. My other news is I'm working on my next book about the Mandela effect and its society. So I don't know yet when that's coming out, because each time I edit it, it's like, wow, I left out this whole huge section.
Yeah.
The big topic.
Well, we'd love to have you back when that's completed.
Yes, absolutely. That would be fun.
Yes. Yeah, I'll definitely be letting you know.
So in addition to the conference website, where can people find you specifically?
Best way to find me is my website, which is realityshifters.com, which indicates we're all doing this. It's not one of us. It's not just me. It's all of us. realityshifters.com.
Great. We will include that in our show notes so that people can find you quickly. And I urge everybody, go check it out. Check out the books. It's fascinating. Sort of be prepared to have your head hurt a little bit as you kind of wrap your head around this. I used to have the same problem when I would read science fiction and they would talk about time travel. And I would get caught up in the details of the time travel and what happens if this, and then, you know, all these variables, and then my head just couldn't hold on to it anymore. It's the same kind of thing, but in a good way.
Yeah, yes. And even more so because this is real.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Deb, and thank you, Carol.
Oh, you're so welcome. Yeah, we're thrilled. This is something Deb and I love, these conversations. And we've been friends for over 20 years. And conversations like this are very common to us. And because I don't have that many friends that will get into this kind of thing. And it's just so fun when you have, you know, kind of a like-minded soul.
Right. Well, you guys are so special. I just love what you're doing with your program. So thank you for everything you're doing.
Oh, thank you. And yes, open invitation. Anytime you have, you know, you want to come back, we'll talk about this with you anytime.
Yes, there are constantly new developments.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening. As always, you can catch the show on the divinebreadcrumb.com, Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Drop us a line, leave us a review, let us know what you want to hear more of. If you have an idea, or if you know of a great guest, or if you think you'd be a great guest, let us know. Get in touch. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we will see you next time.
Hi, everyone. If you love the Divine Breadcrumb podcast and the stories we're sharing, please consider supporting the show by making a donation on our Buy Me a Coffee page. You can set up monthly donations or make a one-time donation in any amount you choose. Just go to thedivinebreadcrumb.com and click on the Support TDB tab. Or you can go to buymeacoffee.com/TDB. Again, that's buymeacoffee.com/TDB. We're forever grateful for your support.